And welcome back, folks. This is part number two to a multi-part series of Paul McGuire. PaulMcGuire.us, that's his website. HagmanPI.com, that's my website. Together, we are tackling this great reset. We are tackling all of the improprieties and immorality and actually war against Christians, Christian conservatives, looking at the bigger picture of things. And Paul, during the first segment, was just so kind to really kind of map out where he was coming from, who he is, and really kind of setting the stage, if you will. But even more than that, he got into some good stuff, and we're going to continue with that. Paul McGuire, author of, would you say 86 books? I mean,
I forgot.
A ton of books.
No, it's not 86 books. It's got to be 46 books.
46. Okay. Yeah. But still, I mean, wow.
You know what my wife said to me?
46 books. Go ahead.
The reason I wrote all those books is, excuse the semi-vulgarness. I said, honey, the reason I wrote all those books is because my pants were literally on fire. My ass was on fire for 40 years. What I'm trying to say is, if I wasn't in conflict, if there weren't enemies breathing down my neck, if I wasn't fighting hell and high water and born in a hurricane, none of those books would, I might have written one book, because that's what happens to most people.
Right.
But when you find yourself in the whirlwind, and you're in the whirlwind, that's why I wrote all the books. I had to. Either that or go insane. I had to get the message out or it implodes on you.
You know, there's very little overlap. And I'm going to say this because you do have book packages there.
Right.
Books, there's very little overlap in terms of subject matter. Sure, there is some, but not enough to say, wow, I should have only gotten half of those. No, they're all special in their own right. So Paul's latest book, Power From On High, is to me a seminal product. And I've got to say, it addresses what is happening today. So Paul, I don't want to take any of your time because you've got so much to share. You continue with where we left off. We were talking about a number of things, including and especially the anti-Semitism. We left off there. We left off about how the media is treating everything. We talked about the critical race theory, about them really the unelected bureaucrats really kidnapping our children mentally. And so all of this is taking place right now, and people. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm going to share this with you. Although we spoke off air, we didn't speak about this. I get so many emails, people saying, "What can we possibly do to stop what's coming, or to stop this, or to fight back? How do we fight back, especially as Christians and as conservatives? How do we righteously fight back?" Because there's a whole boatload of people ready to fight back with AR-15s and whatever they got at the ready. Okay, so I get that. I understand that. I'm okay with that, but. Because we can't have dialogue anymore. It's either their way or the highway. It's either their way or the ovens for us. And really, that's not a, you know, so you go ahead and if you want to address that, fine. If you want to go.
No, that's my favorite question. That's my favorite question, because I've been consumed with a truthful, effective, strategic answer to that question. And I've spent a lifetime researching and studying and praying and thinking about what is the answer to that question. So let me answer it as efficiently as I can. And I hope those people who are the ones asking that question, and it is a legitimate question, will pay close attention. Okay, I'm going to tell you just like it is, but I'm going to try to be as strategic and surgical as I can. First thing is, you have to know, you don't have to be an expert. You have to know something about history. The way you know something about history is to read and research. With the risk of sounding out like I'm purely selling my books, yes, I am selling my books. Purely? No. Maybe 85%, 87%. But that's not why I'm an author, is to sell books. I'm an author to communicate a message. And anybody who knows me, including my wife and stuff, they know that when the day is done, what Paul McGuire was really about was not making money. It was not selling books or being famous. It was about communicating the message. Now, book sales and stuff like that, and this is an important principle for any of your listeners, no matter what they do for a living. Oh, the book sale, oh, it's important, but that will always come if you're doing what God called you to do. And I can't, and the way you know that you're doing what God called you to do is you discover that you cannot do anything else but what God called you to do. That's where you feel totally alive. That's where the flames of the Holy Spirit explode in your inner man and mind. That's where your dopamine levels, your serotonin levels, your, not your estrogen, but the other upwardly energizing biochemicals fire off. It's when you're doing what God called you to do. The men and women, and I know because I've been in the wrong fields, I've labored in the wrong vineyard, I've worked for the wrong master, and it's a horrible, horrible thing.
It feels wrong.
Your days being tortured inside because you know you're not doing what you were called to do. So you find out what you were called to do, and that most often will line up with what you truly want to do, hopefully in a state of consciousness that is somewhat pure and holy and listening to God. I mean, if you're like intoxicated with being the star of The Voice and the other one, that's nice. But is that really your calling? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I'm not your judge. So for me to find out what I was called to do was almost a lifetime of struggle. How do you put on your resume? And I've had, you talked about my strange jobs. Yeah, I haven't even begun to tell you the jobs I've had that break the box. I was thinking of one today getting ready for the show. I'll only tell you 3 seconds of the story. I used to do, in addition to a full-time laborious job that I hated in marketing, I would take my lunch break. This is way back in the time of dinosaurs. On my lunch break, I would run about a mile each way because we didn't have cell phones back then to get into a boiling hot payphone. And I would follow up on press releases I sent to the big time wire services of that time, you know, like UPI and Associated.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. When they were around.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would get into a phone booth with drunks and alcoholics and people divorcing their wives, trying to get a lawyer, pounding and embarrassing me on the glass doors of the telephone booth, you know, let me in, I've been waiting too long. Well, I'm on the phone with the head of the UPI AP and the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences. I'm trying to represent myself as a class act, and I have these clowns pounding on the door of the phone booth. Okay, so I pitched my idea for a national news story, because I got hired to promote the cause of Indian tribes all across America who were being discriminated against at the upcoming Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, because they were wrongfully designated. The movie was, they used the Native American dialect as the language in the Indians of the movie, which is accurate. So, but the Hollywood industry classified them as a foreign film, even though the Indians contend, and I agree with them, that they are the first people who controlled America. They're the Native Americans. And so the Indians were very insulted by being pushed into the corner as foreign film, when in fact they were the only authentic Indian film. The name of the movie was Wind Walker. It was nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards, which I, behind the scenes, promoted and arranged. Okay, I'm helping the Indians, so I organize an organization called Indians United. And I write their press releases, and I organize and schedule and plan a massive Indian demonstration at the upcoming Academy Awards of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, right in front of their theater, right in front of their building during the Academy Awards, or right before the Academy Awards and during the Academy Awards. So the head of the name of my press release, which I sent out from my house, this is why I don't go for BS stories and excuses from conservatives, Christians, and other people who say, I don't have the time to do it. I know you just don't know my life. Yeah, I know your life. I've worked 100 times harder than you, and I did it. You can do it. Get off your ass and do it. Quit making excuses. That's a good theology. Okay, so the head of the press release goes, Indians to author Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, Peace Pipe or Tribal Trouble. Now, I have the Indian chiefs of the various tribes, big time Indian chiefs, not fakes. They all gather in front of the main building of the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences, wearing full official Indian chief ceremonial outfits with their long hair and the robes and the whole deal, okay? A lot of them. A lot of Indians, chiefs, fully dressed, and there's several authentic Indian peace pipes being passed around. And the Indian chiefs are smoking it. All the major news television networks are there, ABC, CBS, and NBC at that time. And they're all running it for television live. And they ceremonially and in humility offer the heads of the Academy of Arts and Music Arts and Sciences, they offer them a gesture of peace and reconciliation by handing them a smoking peace pipe and offering them puff on the pipe and to come to some kind of fair agreement, okay? And this is, I mean, you know, Hollywood and the media love that kind of visual stuff, okay? So the guy that's the head of the UPI at the time says, is there going to be violence? And I said, I don't know, you know, because I really wasn't into violence. He said, you give me violence, he said, or at least give me action. And I will give you, at the same time, I will give you the power to roadblock the evening news. Roadblock the evening news means, at the same time, your story is the main story with your visuals and your message. It's going off on every major network at the exact same time all across the country. So there's nowhere the audience can tune into back then where they could avoid hearing the Indians. You understand?
No, I fully understand. Just
okay.
Nothing's changed, Marshall. Go ahead.
Right. So all of a sudden, it's D-Day, and I'm arranging this from a phone booth. Man, jogging to phone booth with like 3 pounds of quarters in my pockets. So I don't feel sorry for all these punks complaining about everything.
You're talking about the Academy Awards. You're talking about the Brando days, right?
Yes. So Hollywood is all for Indians, and I become a bad choice of words, but it's in a sense the not the spiritual guru, but the marketing guru for the Indians United. And I went down to their major meetings at LAX airport. You know, there was like 5,000 Indians down there, and I'm received like I'm a diplomat from some, you know, very important country, and I'm getting them organized. How do I know how to organize? Because I paid attention when I was with Abby Hoffman and Timothy Leary and the other radicals when they were organizing the first Earth Day demonstration in the middle of Manhattan. And I was there in the closed meeting in a tent where the most powerful radical activists said out loud, now that the Vietnam War is ending, we got to move over to environmentalism as our cause. So this event today, Earth Day, is going to be the first Earth Day of many Earth Days every year at the same time. And Abby Hoffman and you name it, they were all there. And I learned. Little Paul McGuire learned. He memorized. He watched. He didn't forget anything he saw. And he simply applied the principles that he learned from the radical activists to help the Indians. So they ring the doorbell. The networks are there with their trucks and the whole deal, filming everything. The whole nation sees the peace pipe and the smoke and the offer of peace from the Indians. The claim is legitimate. Why are you kicking us out of the Academy Awards and designating our film, Windwalker, as a foreign film when it's really a Native American film? And the next thing you know, there's massive uprisings and demonstrations on major Indian reservations across the nation. They're going off like crazy. I'm getting calls from senators and everything else. And then the next thing you know, it's the night of the Academy Awards. And I don't know. I mean, I was there, but the guards and the police and the soldiers of the Academy Awards, you know, locked the Indians out from actually the inner core. But it didn't matter because the cameras followed the Indian chiefs wherever they went. And I don't remember the result because as they were voting to reinstate Windwalker as a legitimate Native American film, I realized I was about to inadvertently light up a revolution starting on the Indian, you know, reservations. And things were going crazy in Washington, D.C. And the guy who hired me, famous independent producer, I didn't figure he was going to watch my back. So I kind of exited. But those are the skills I learned to do what I had to do later.
And if I can just interject sure. something here, I came across a book titled Chaos. And I thought of you so many times when I was reading this book. I know your experiences in Haight-Ashbury and that Haight-Ashbury district mm-hmm. and MK Ultra and how Charles Manson, and you might think, well, it's a stupid segue here, but
no, it isn't. Go for it. But
the MK Ultra plans and schemes of the government using Charles Manson, using mm-hmm. the media. Mm-hmm. So what you just described to me, it seems like the media has doubled down. The intelligence community has doubled down today
yeah.
in what they did in your time at that
yes.
time. Go ahead,
yes.
sir. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm so glad you asked that because you got me back on the target here. I don't believe if you give your life to the Lord, and even as the Lord is calling you, and you may be in a state of ignorance, that it is indeed the Lord calling you. When you're in that zone, God's calling you, and you're going to experience synchronicity and all kinds of things. No, I'm not a New Ager. Yes, I know thoroughly the difference between the Kundalini Spirit and the Holy Spirit. Yes, I have personally experienced the Kundalini Spirit, cosmic consciousness, saw the great white light, had an OBE, left out-of-body experience, experienced mental telepathy, and that's just the beginning. And I only say that because I get these bozos accusing me of being, how can I be seduced by the Kundalini Spirit when I've spent like 8 years exposing it and talking about the difference between the Kundalini Spirit that comes from yoga and true biblical Christianity. So, mm-hmm. so anyway, by God's grace, I'm up now in the Hollywood Hills on Lookout Mountain Avenue. I did not know it at the time, but that was ground zero of where the counterculture, MK Ultra, and military industrial complex, Manchurian Candidate, LSD, Charles Manson stuff. I was in the belly of the beast. I didn't know it at the time. Okay, I
it's
learned
amazing
about
how
it.
God puts you there, you know?
Right. And I wrote my first Christian books there. I'll never forget because my office and our bedroom was like microscopic, but we had this beautiful glass ceiling. It was like a ski cabin hanging off the cliff of the canyons. I didn't know it at the time, but that strange, funky, very large building that looked like an airport, that had what looked like massive guard towers, that had high security fences all around it. I didn't know it at the time. That, as I was hiking up the street one day to get exercise up Laurel Canyon, Lookout Mountain, God's hands on my life. I do not know what he's showing me. And then I realized, because, see, all the houses are pressed close together, so you can't really, it's hard to get an accurate view of what's down in the valley. So I snuck between these two houses on Lookout Mountain Avenue, and for the first time, I managed to see this large panoramic view of a massive valley that just turns out to be very short walk between that valley and my house on Lookout Mountain Avenue. And they had the guard towers and stuff. So as I'm checking this out, and later on I brought my wife up there, we're discussing, well, what is this? And my only possible guess was, because I saw these massive water tanks, school buses, And this, there was no way to describe this building because it was out of the box. So I said to her, you know what? The only thing this could be is the cult compound of some guru, because it doesn't make sense. It's not like any other building I ever saw. What I didn't know at the time, but God revealed to me about, I don't know, 8 years later. And I write the entire story in my book, Power from On High, and A Prophecy of the Future of America, and the other books. I don't repeat myself. I write a disclosure of what I really discovered. And what I discovered was that that strange building that was hidden by foliage and houses between me and my house, that strange building just happened to be the infamous Lookout Mountain Avenue Laboratory, which was a secret laboratory in the heart of the Hollywood Hills that first took off in 1947, okay, and where they shot thousands of pro-U.S. propaganda films, pro-war films in support of America, using mainstream actors, mainstream directors. They Jimmy churned Stewart, them out at the Lookout Mountain Avenue Laboratory. I personally think they also used, while they were filming, MKUltra technology.
This is America today, based on the foundation of people like Jimmy Stewart and Henry Fonda, even Ronald Reagan going in there and, being the handlers of the current narrative. Go on, sir.
Well, you're exactly right. So what I discovered through my life, and I believe this is available to every person who is pursuing God, okay? If you're listening to God and you're asking God questions and you have a hunger for truth, God will incrementally and supernaturally download into your mind, heart, and spirit all kinds of truth, not just spiritual truth, but technological truth, scientific truth, psychological truth, cultural truth, truth that really matters. But the question is, God is asking, can I trust this guy with it? Okay. That explains the uncanny and the absolute miraculous encounters, meetings, being in the right place at the right time, in getting out of the wrong place at the right time, and an entire sequential series of essentially mathematically and statistically impossible coincidences, but they weren't coincidences. They were divine arrangements, divine encounters. Okay, so I'm looking down at this laboratory, and then I discover later on that, yes, initially it was built by the Army and the Air Force. It was built as a, like an airplane, you know, with the four towers to track any planes or missiles or potential attacks upon America during World War I, the latter part of World War I and World War II. That was the first and primary purpose of the Lookout Mountain Laboratory. It was a place for airplanes and protection of our nation. And like you said, big time movie stars, big time directors did propaganda films there. But as the years went by, and I include this in my books in detail, Power from On High, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World, A Prophecy of the Future of America, and a lot of other books. I build on the truth as it is revealed to me by the Lord. And I have not just rumors, but I have foundational firsthand evidence. Okay, so it turns out that the Lookout Mountain Laboratory, the street between the Lookout Mountain Laboratory and all the rock stars and superstars and filmmakers of the counterculture that took off in the 1970s, the only barrier between the laboratory and me and the rock star enclave was the small winding street known as Lookout Mountain Avenue, which the former governor of California, Jerry Brown, would roar up the street. I mean, it's a scary street. At about 70 miles an hour in his limousine, former Governor Jerry Brown would be taken to Madonna's castle, which was at the very pinnacle and the very top and the very highest place of Lookout Mountain Avenue. So, okay, so the rock and roll stars that are all around me and the producers, this is where it gets crazy. The Doors. He names, Jim Morrison names his book The Doors after Aldous Huxley's book The Doors of Perception and the Usage of Psychedelic Drugs. The Mamas and the Papas, Frank Zappa, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And you could go on and on and on. But here is the through line between the entire 70s West Coast rock culture. The through line is that all these Jimi Hendrix, all these superstar rock and roll musicians, including females, what they all have in common is all of their fathers were huge, big-time military, naval intelligence, Navy, all branches of the U.S. military. They are the top military naval officers. And so, for example, Jim Morrison's father was an admiral. He was the admiral of the giant naval ship was in the Battle of Potemkin. Frank Zappa's father was an admiral. It was either Crosby or Stills. There were two of them, and their fathers were admirals in the Navy. So the secret behind all the rock stars in the Hollywood Hills and Lookout Mountain is that the vast majority of them came from military families, and their fathers were the top-ranking admirals of their time, many who served in Vietnam. And so you ask yourself, well, why such a proliferation of naval intelligence and admirals and generals and everything else? Why? Because this is a theory. I don't know it to be a truth. It's just a theoretical position of mine. When your father is that high up in the military and the military calls on you to have your son or daughter take place in a military experiment involving mind-altering drugs or just about anything, that it's expected of you to volunteer your children because they're not going to blow the whistle on you. That's my theory.
Okay, that's a great theory.
Right. Okay, so I'm surrounded by all this. And then I realize the obvious, that the agents of the counterculture, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and the lyrics and the songs, and you've heard Crosby, Stills, and Nash and everybody else, the agents of the counterculture all turn out to be the high-level sons and daughters of the most powerful U.S. naval and U.S. military officers, admirals, generals in the entire nation. And they're all in this enclave in the Hollywood Hills, very tribal, right across the street from the Lookout Mountain Avenue Laboratory. It gets weirder than that, and then I'll pull back and let you say whatever you want. Other things, I'm praying, because by this time, I'm writing two books, my first two books. I had just finished being the executive producer of a low-budget Road Warrior-type movie called Wired to Kill that Frankie Schaefer directed. It opened in like 250 theaters in the U.S., and it was number 12 of all box office releases, despite the fact that it wasn't a great film. But the reason it was doing so red hot at the box office is it met that need among the male audience, okay? And our trailer was hot. So we were making bank, okay? We were making money. Our film, which was low budget, was just burning up the tracks. But then a weird thing happened. Oliver Stone, a very talented director, releases Full Metal Jacket. And guess what? The quality of Full Metal Jacket opening in like 1,000 theaters versus our 350 theaters, he blew us out of the theatrical marketplace. And you know, that is what it is. We had a nice ride. It was short. Okay, so then I move up with that money that I made. I move into the Hollywood Hills with my wife and buy this like ski cabin house on the slope of a mountain. Now, if you were to do a GPS check, which you can do, and you look down and look out Mountain Avenue, you can substantiate everything I'm telling people. So you can't accuse me of lying when, if you get off your butt, you can see it on GPS from a satellite. Now, here's the other thing. As I'm hiking and walking around the area, and I'm doing more further deep dive research where I experience Holy Spirit guided synchronicity, I discover that as you go up Lookout Mountain, and if you were to follow Lookout Mountain on all the mountainous winding roads, you will run right into the driveway and the front yard of where the Beach Boys mansion was, where Charles Manson hung out with the Beach Boys.
Yep.
Where what's her name? Sharon Tate lived right near that area, and where the slaughter was. And then if you were to keep taking that winding road where the Beach Boys mansion was, where Manson was, it gets heavier than this, because certain things happened. I would feel a supernatural understanding in my inner man. I would see like maps. I would experience overwhelmingly strong impressions for guidance. I would see like a visualization of things that I never saw or even knew about in the physical sense realm. I was experiencing it supernaturally. Now, if you're skeptical, that's fine. Just ride with me. So if you continue to take that winding road, it will eventually take you down and you'll go across Sunset Boulevard, where my friend Pat Boone, I think he still has his agent, still has his offices in that building. But anyway, you cross Sunset Boulevard and you go through these winding high-end streets with movie stars and directors and everything else. And you keep traveling on that winding road in the Hollywood Hills, and you end up crossing the 118 freeway, and you end up crossing this large church. And if you look carefully off of the 118, and anybody driving on the 118 could see it today, you see this bizarre, looked like God came down and made a massive sculpture out of rocks that's like sky high. There's these two massive structures made out of boulders. And if you travel into those boulder parks, you get back on the winding trail of where Charles Manson operated from. If you look down from the cliffs, you can see right into the farm, to the land, to the farmhouse and the barn of the guy who owned the land that Charles Manson and the family were camping out at. You can see where they camped out at, and it's eerie to this day because you can smell Manson all over it. So we kept going where no man had gone before, at least and lived, past that winding road. And I begin to get these supernatural impressions, which I've had all my life since I accepted the Lord, where the Lord will either explain to me highly scientific and technological information that is normally beyond my pay grade, or the Lord will supernaturally reveal things to me that my natural mind, my natural IQ, can't possibly process by itself. So I'm going down this winding road. Then I go back to my house to do more research, because I always do more research, more research, more research. And a divinely inspired thought occurs to me that the Nazis are efficient. So the Nazis are not going to reinvent their deep underground bases for rocket launching. They're not going to redo all the architecture. They're going to borrow on the previous architectural plans. The Lord puts that knowledge in my heart. And then the Lord shows me other things. So it turns out that as I skim some very, very obscure research that goes back to the ancient South American Indians and their presence in California hundreds of years ago, I get these impressions about Wernher von Braun and his connection to the SS and the occult and mind control and rocketry. And as I'm thinking about this, the Lord, I get my hands on aerial photographic maps in black and white taken by the U.S. military and the military of Great Britain. And I'm looking at, on the coast of Germany and Europe, I'm looking at an aerial view of what appears to be a massive concentration camp filled with Jews. And from the exterior and an aerial height, that's exactly what it looks like. But in my inner man, supernaturally, a still small voice is kind of speaking to me, and it's saying, the Nazis would not have wasted resources. They would have used existing plans and adopted them for warfare and construction in America. They wouldn't have reinvented the wheel. So I follow supernatural intuitive guidance versus merely intellectual and rational guidance. And then I get my hands on, I think it's called Spelunker magazine. I didn't even know what Spelunker is. You probably know. Right?
Okay. You're dating yourself, yeah.
Yeah, well, I didn't know what Spelunker was. Spelunker, it sounded like a German beer party. So anyway, a Spelunker is somebody who researches and goes deep, deep into caves.
Right.
So somehow I get my hands on the internet on Spelunker data and research and black and white photographs of what exactly is deep underground beneath the Nazi concentration camp on the coast of Germany, not that far from the island of Thule. And when I see these deep underground pictures under, deep, deep under the Nazi concentration camp, what I see in black and white are crystal clear pictures of tens and thousands of Nazi concentration camp victims who are slaving away and building and assembling for the Nazis, Nazi rockets, the early Nazi V1 rockets, the early Nazi V2 rockets, and rockets of all kinds are being assembled along with their rocket fuel deep underground in the hidden caverns underneath the concentration camps. And then as you look more carefully, you see what looks like to be $1 billion in gold near the concentration camp slaves. And all this gold is wrapped in like some kind of duffel bag and tied tightly. And I verified it. It turned out to be about, some astronomical quantity of gold buried deep underground. And then as I looked around even further, I discovered that the guard towers in the Nazi concentration camp, of which Wernher von Braun, despite the lies, he was an active member and leader in these concentration camps. What I discovered was that these concentration camps and the gold were designed to be used with the concentration camps as a camouflage, as a cover for the dark secret of the underground concentration camps and the underground Nazi manufacturing of Nazi rocket V1 rockets and Nazi V2 rockets. And so the giant poles and guard towers that are on the surface of the ground that could be photographed from the air, when you dig underneath these towers, these guard towers, the guard towers serve a secret dual purpose at night. During the daytime, when they're being photographed by the Allies, they look like guard towers. But in the dark of the evening, when people are photographing the guard towers have a dual function. They suddenly, when they're flipped up vertically, the guard towers are easily turned into plain old rocket launch manufacturing towers. So what the U.S. military and the Russians and the Europeans and everybody else, why they kept flying over the Nazi rocket production plants was because they thought it was nothing but a concentration camp. Had they spent more time examining the Nazi concentration camp, they would have noticed that these guard towers also served as mounting towers for the V1 and V2 rocket towers. But from a high aerial position, you couldn't distinguish the two. Are you tracking with me?
I am. And I can't help but think ahead, only to say this. You know what? There's nothing new under the sun, but what you're describing is, we're seeing the manifestation of then now. Okay, I hope people get that.
You got
And folks, please don't look at this from a merely historical perspective, but look at this as a current and future. Well, this is not just history, but this is prophetic, if you will. But go ahead, sir.
No, you nailed it. You know, the fact that you nailed it, and this is why I come on your show, the fact that you nailed it is a very rare response from a talk show host, because you're not just offering me your opinion, whether your audience realizes it or not. You know, you're a deeply read individual, and you have a deep knowledge of history. You have a deep intellect, and you're able to connect the dots at a level where, quite frankly, most people can't go, because whether you realize it or not, and I'm sure you do realize it, God has given you a prophetic gift. You just don't walk around and wave a flag and call attention to yourself. Okay, so this starts to open up the mother load, okay? As I'm following a download of the Spirit of God. So now I'm in the mountains above Sunset Boulevard. And if you look at GPS, these mountains are as barren and as ugly as the lunar landscape. And I have both traveled in that area, and I spent time looking at GPS photographs from an aerial height. And what you see is a massive plant near a vast network of deep subterranean caves, and this massive network of, it's hard to identify what they are, but the Lord has impregnated my inner man with the supernatural knowledge of what they are before I have the evidence to confirm it. And what it turns out these plants and facilities are, and they're massive and impressive, and they're in a remote, desolate area that heads towards Death Valley and all that. Whether people know it or not, because I didn't used to know this, that geographic location and those plants were built on the exact location of where the giant rocket engine manufacturing plants and rockets were built by the big time rocket companies of America. So in a desolate place that looks like a lunar landscape, that is directly geographically connected to these key points of interest that I just shared with you, brings you to a desolate place. And what was first built on that desolate place, it was either the second most powerful nuclear reactor in California and the United States, or the first most powerful nuclear reactor in California and the United States. I don't remember if it was number one or number two. Either way, it was a nuclear reactor of such amazing power and nobody knows about it. And then it had a leak of radiation, and supposedly they're cleaning it up. Now, how do I find this? I didn't find it through intellectual, mathematical engineering processing, which I'm totally for, because God gave you two brain hemispheres, the right and the left. One is more creative, intuitive. One is more engineering and precision orientated. The goal is not to chuck one out the window. God created you as a duality. Don't insult the architecture, the biological architecture of God. He made you both intuitive, and he made you rational, scientific, and engineering. You don't chuck it out the window. You learn how to operate both functions of your brain, hemispheric functions in your brain, in balance. Okay, so I'm being supernaturally impregnated with a stream of ideas that are far beyond my human ability. And what is being impressed in my inner man is this download that is repetitive. And God keeps repeating to me, the Nazis were efficient. They're precise. they wouldn't reinvent their technology just because they have nothing better to do. They would take the existing technology that works, and they would simply enhance and expand on their existing technology. Thus, the V1 rocket program, the V2 rocket program, and the other rocket programs and everything else are simply a replication and amplification of the earlier rocket and atomic and nuclear research facility that literally is so powerful in its nuclear output that it could power most of California and a significant part of the United States if it was to go down. Okay, so I get back home and more deep dive research. People always want to know, why don't you answer your phone? Because I have a choice. I can do deep dive research and open up things for the body of Christ and the people of America that potentially can set them free, or I can spend all my stinking time answering computer robot calls trying to sell me Joe Biden solar panels, which I know don't work. I choose just not to answer the phone, so forgive me. Okay, so now we're going to go deeper in the dive. I read this book years ago from a Christian publisher that praised Wernher von Braun because he was a born-again Christian. In my research, I have read nowhere that Wernher von Braun, the former Nazi rocket scientist, the driving force between Operation Paperclip, which illegally imported over 12,000 Nazi rocket, mind control, and biological warfare scientists, Wernher von Braun did not become a Sunday school teacher in a flash of light. I don't see any historical record of his rejection or willingness to expose this evil danger threatening America. Now, let's take it even in a deeper dive. As you explore that geographic territory, you discover that Charles Manson and the family have an entire network of secret caves and secret indoor dwellings that go back thousands and thousands of years. And there's one particular picture where you can see on these winding mountainous roads these trucks that on top of these transportation trucks are the massive giant engines of not only the V1, V2 rockets, but the V5 rockets, the Gemini program, all the big mother gigantic astronomically big rocket engines are packed and strapped on these open-ended trucks that are bringing the most powerful rocket engines in the world up a mountainous path where they test them in the same laboratory that they power most of California with through rocket fuel, through gasoline, and through nuclear power. So on one, there's a fenced-off area that didn't used to be fenced off. And it's a warning that this property and the property they're referring to is the blatantly visible evidence of the deep underground caves of Manson and before that, the Indians. And the sign says this is the property of either, no, it was the property of NASA. Keep out. It's illegal for you to go in there. Well, what is in there? I believe that what is in there is Manson had a deep network of highly sophisticated underground caves by which him and his satanic family would hide out, and they were fully stocked. Because remember, if you listen to the album lyrics of Helter Skelter, which I believe was implanted in Manson's mind through repetitive listening of the Beatles music while he was put into a trance state or dosed with LSD. When you hear the lyrics of Helter Skelter, which is a prediction of a race war in America, the reason Manson is fixated with that is he's been programmed through MKUltra programming to be obsessed with that. That is why the evidence is in plain sight. That is why Charles Manson has a swastika on his forehead. That is why the followers of Charles Manson have a swastika on their forehead. Underneath the anatomical position of the swastika is the fact that that area of your skull where Manson put his swastika happens to also be the place of the supernatural and occult biological transmitter and receiver known as the pineal gland, which allows those that have opened the pineal gland through occult participation to see into the invisible realm.
Absolutely fantastic. And everything you're saying there is 100% true. By the way, I have in my possession, given to me from a law enforcement professional, and I guess you can buy these on Amazon as well, and a vinyl album done by Manson and his followers. Okay, this is post arrest. Okay,
right.
When you listen to that, the hypnotic and the LSD type of suggestibility. Okay, that's contained in that album.
Yes,
mirrors exactly what you are saying. Okay, and it takes really Christian discernment. Now it's a place where I would not direct many Christians to go to. If your calling is not that, don't go there.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely. Or you're going to get sucked into a vortex that you can't get out of.
Exactly. And I've seen that happen to people. And
me too.
It's not a pretty sight, believe me.
No, so, it is not. And even people who are strong in the Lord, like me, like you, and others, one of the most dangerous temptations I face, and probably any man or woman of God that stands up for the truth in these areas, is this: if we ever even slightly lose our calibration and we think that our strength is in ourselves and we're not in eternal vigilance and we're not wearing the full armor of God, I have seen Satan and the principalities and powers subtly attack me and subtly attempt to seduce me by my intellectual and spiritual pride, by which I deny that I have.
Yes.
You see, because there may be small lies in my life, okay, like there is in everybody's life. That's why I never worry about saying it, because everybody who's listening, who's judging me, you probably have more lies than I have.
Yeah.
But when God has gifted you with anything, okay, there, you are a fallen man. I am a fallen man. End of story. We have a propensity towards sin. And as such, when you research and get involved in this stuff, the devil seduces us with such a subtlety, and he's patient, that he will attempt to reel us in and attempt to capture our souls and minds. Even if we make only the slightest deviation or the most microscopic departure from the truth. So your words of warning should be heeded.
Well, okay, and thank you. In the context of today's events, and Paul, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong here. We've got about 2.5 minutes of this segment left. But everything we're talking about today, you hear people talking about Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates and all of these individuals, or the injection, I get that, or the bioweapon release, I get that too. This is the foundational part of everything that people are talking about.
Right.
Right? You've got to look at this in order to understand the present.
Absolutely. And people who are lazy and think they know it all, which is another word for pride, especially Christian ministers, Christian leaders, and so-called strong Christians or strong conservatives, we're all vulnerable to it. But what you got to understand is, because you're gifted and knowledgeable to whatever degree, you are a prime target from the principalities and powers, because they will use that as bait. And I said this, you know, he's gone on to be with the Lord now, so I'm not blowing his cover. But on occasion, I would meet with one of my spiritual fathers and spiritual mentors, Dr. Jack Haber, founder of the Church on the Way and founder of the King's College and Seminary. And I taught Bible prophecy and eschatology for his seminary for, like, I don't know, 20 years. So I would meet with him every so often when I didn't abuse his time. But I would meet with him every so often when I felt I needed to bounce a decision off somebody that I knew was wise and had been around the block.
Man, that and is I, so important.
He's going on to be the Lord. I'll tell you what it was. I told him that I had been talking to and corresponding with one of the highest level Satanists in the United States military and psychological operations.
Aquino.
Yeah, Colonel Michael Aquino, the head of PSYOPs.
Right.
And Aquino had read some of my articles. For all I know, he listened to your program. Anyways, I guess he contacted me first, but then I responded. And he's a genius. He makes most, I mean, I'm not trying to pick on Christians, but he makes most Christians look, embarrass them because they're so ignorant, okay? Now, but here's the problem. He's one of the highest level Satanists in the world. He was second in command to Anti LaVey. There are stories about him on the internet that would make your bones chill. And he wouldn't call himself a Satanist. He would call himself a different branch of Satanism. But he also was at the top of the power chain of the U.S. military. And his book, which I read, and if you're not strong in the Lord, I mean really strong in the Lord, you don't need to read his book, which is, I forgot what it was called, Mind Wars.
Right.
And what I learned from him, okay, is the book is brilliantly written. He references philosophers and scientists. And when he speaks, when he drops names, you know, I don't tune out because he's dropping names. I listen when he drops names because I happen to know that the names he's dropping, like George Lucas of Star Wars, and that's just some. The names that he's dropping are verifiable. He's not lying, and they are the big shots. So he made some overtures to me, not in a sexual way. I have to say that because I know where people's minds go. He made overtures to me, not in a sexual way, but let's just call it in a very gentlemanly, scholarly, two generals sitting in armchairs in a private club in Manhattan, you know, drinking champagne, and I don't drink champagne. And he's saying in a playful way, well, why don't you come join the winning side of the battle?
You know?
So it's disarming because it's so charming. He's very charming, powerfully literate. And then as he observed and read that I believe the Bible literally, and I believe that the Bible is literally the Word of God, you know, he very delicately and with great grace and motion, he says to me, "You like just like the devil would have spoken to Eve, actually, now that I think about it." He says to me, "You don't really believe that, Paul, do you?" With the same intonation that I could imagine Satan said to Eve when, you know, God told her not to eat from the fruit of the tree in the middle of the garden. He goes to me, "You don't really believe that all, do you?" You know,
oh, man.
Which gets to you because what he's implying is, what are you, an imbecile? You actually believe this fundamentalist fairy tale garbage?
Wow.
And I didn't back off. I said, you know, I do, but I don't have the, we don't have the time. I wasn't copping out. I could have given him an explanation, but we didn't have time. I said, if you would give me the time to explain my rationale for believing in that, I think you would find at the least that even if you didn't share my beliefs, at least you would understand that I have an intellectually scientific and convincing argument for why I believe that and what my reasons are.
Man.
Which was an effective temporal drawing a line in the sand.
Got it. All right, folks, you're listening to Hagman PI and Hagman PI. That's our website, paulmaguire.us. the book Power from On High, absolutely critical, I think, for every one living through today's events to get. We're up against it. Are you okay to do with one more segment with me, my brother, or do you need
am comfortable to do with you endless segments until the second coming of Christ or till the rapture, whatever comes first. Whatever bus comes first, I'm out of here. Until then, I'm yours.
All right. We're gonna bid adieu to Global Star Satellite Radio Network. We're going to come back. Folks, you can follow us right along on Rumble and Bridie on PaulMcGuire.us. Agmon PI coming up next.